This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A busy week in state politics has centered on the power struggle between the governor and legislators. Abortion regulations, magistrates performing gay marriages, and proposed gun regulations are key issues at the moment. Governor Pat McCrory vetoed two measures passed by the General Assembly. Lawmakers responded by overriding one of his vetoes. Last night, the governor announced that he will sign a controversial abortion regulation into law. That breaks a campaign promise on the issue for the second time in his tenure. Jeff DeBeery is WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief, and he joins me now from Raleigh. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Frank.
Let's start with the vetoes. Governor McCrory vetoed two measures late last week. The first, a bill that would give magistrates in the state the ability to opt out of performing really all marriages, but it's so that they wouldn't have to perform same-sex marriages, and that would be based on their religious beliefs. The other bill he nixed pertained to employer protection. So how did lawmakers in the chambers respond to those two vetoes?
So House Bill 405, this is a bill that supporters say is designed to punish people who take jobs in order to expose the breaking of laws that are taking place at different workplaces. They say, the supporters say, that this is a way to provide protections for employers. Opponents say that, you know, it really limits whistleblowers. It discourages them from coming forward. As to that bill, we've talked about that before. Both chambers voted initially really by strong margins to pass that bill. So they quickly overrode the governor yesterday on that issue. That's the ag gag bill, if you will. As for Senate Bill 2, the Senate will, and an override starts in the chamber where the bill started. So Senate Bill 2, the magistrate's bill, has been overridden in the Senate. The House convened a little more than an hour ago, went into recess, went into caucus. Best we can discern, they were trying to determine if they had the necessary 3/5 votes, which would be 72 votes, if all the lawmakers were present. It doesn't appear they're going to vote on the override today. It could come on Monday night, but this is a fluid situation. The override vote on the magistrate's issue was on the calendar yesterday. It was on the calendar again today. It doesn't look right now like it'll be voted on today, but an override vote is probably coming next week, and we're expecting that vote to be close. Again, you need 3/5 of a majority of those present in the chamber to override the governor. So if there are only, just for conversation's sake, if there are 12 people in the chamber, you get 8 out of 12 votes, then you're going to be okay. But if that's part of the factor of what we're dealing
with. Sure, and when the fact that this vote is delayed, it's been on the calendar but is delayed, suggests exactly how close it is. If you have to get 3/5 of those present and you want to override the veto, you're going to wait. And that's a clear indication that it is a very close vote. And the other law, to be clear, is also a law that essentially what the legislature wanted to do was protect businesses against whistleblowers, so punish whistleblowers who might reveal things about businesses that we should know, but if they went in under false pretenses, this law would punish them. So those two are by the by. Meanwhile, the governor announced that he will not veto another controversial measure. This bill would force women to wait 72 hours before having an abortion after seeing a doctor. Explain the law to us. And remember, the governor had said he will not pass or sign any legislation that would further restrict abortion. This does restrict abortion. The governor says he's going to sign it. Tell us about the law and about the governor's decision.
The law started out, Frank, as titled something along the lines of clarifying and modifying abortion regulations, and it is now known as Children and Women's Protection Act of 2015. So what happened was a political trick or maneuver, call it what you want. The bill sponsors added in a whole bunch of provisions that related to statutory rape and domestic violence and things that, you know, they saw as strengthening the bill from a bipartisan standpoint. Democrats and opponents of the bill say this is a cheap maneuver, and, you know, it forces their hand to either support the enhanced additional abortion regulations, which they don't support, they don't believe in, or for those in the minority to vote against this, and then, you know, as they've put it, they risk having attack ads run against them because, you know, they don't support children, they don't support domestic violence measures or measures to protect women and children. So what this bill does pertaining to the abortion is that it will make North Carolina the fifth state with a 72-hour waiting period, along with Missouri, South Dakota, and Utah. Oklahoma voted earlier this spring to implement that 72-hour waiting period. It will come online in November. So, you know, there are various schools of thought as to whether or not this was a major surprise, McCrory announcing he would sign it. You know, he vetoed that the magistrate's bill, and obviously didn't veto this and is signing it into law. And it's interesting if you want to look at these in terms of, so you know, the dueling social measures, because gay marriage is an issue that is much more widely accepted today than it was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. The abortion issue doesn't seem to have shifted as significantly. So, you know, he vetoes the magistrate's issue. He signs the abortion measure. Is it an internal compromise? Is it, you know, a relative compromise, thinking about how far the abortion measure could have gone? It's certainly politics, and obviously, you know, as we're heading into a long election cycle.
All right. Well, the judiciary is not left out of this power struggle either. The Court of Appeals upheld a decision by a lower court and said essentially the legislature acted outside of its authority when it took away teacher tenure. What happened?
This all stems from a 2013 law that passed here at the General Assembly, and that law repeals teacher tenure, also known as career status. So a lower court ruled that it was unconstitutional to do that, to take that away. And Tuesday's ruling by the Court of Appeals essentially just affirms that lower court ruling. It was a 2-1 vote. One of the judges called teacher tenure here in North Carolina a fundamental part of the bargain. For teachers, this is something that's been around, mandated by state law for more than 45 years. So it is not going away yet. It's certainly possible that the issue could head to the state Supreme Court.
All right, your colleague Jorge Valencia reported on yet another heated topic, guns. Yesterday, a proposal to loosen restrictions for firearms emerged from a committee meeting. It was a tight vote. Tell us about the regulation and about the debate.
Well, it was supposed to be on the House floor today. We were expecting a debate on it. It doesn't appear at last check that that debate is going to take place today. Again, a fluid situation. It could be heard. The proposed legislation would make more than a dozen changes, 17, in fact, to gun laws across the state. One of the most controversial provisions is that folks would no longer need a permit to buy a handgun in the state. And supporters say that instead, licensed dealers will run the buyer's name through a national database. You know, there's obviously a lot of opposition to that, to this measure. They point out that, you know, folks buying a gun from an individual, a non-licensed owner, could make purchases without any kind of background checks. And this is something that has divided, you know, some Republicans. It came out of committee yesterday. It actually was a close vote. Votes are typically done by voice. Someone asked for a count of the hands. So they counted the 26 folks who were voting. It was 13-13. And then the chair of that committee yesterday broke the tie, passed it through committee. So it's this is a contentious issue even amongst Republicans and legislators.
And law enforcement has come out against it, right?
They have. There are some concerns. And on that front, they say that, you know, taking away some provisions that are already in place, processes that have been long withstanding here in the state that go through sheriff's departments would be taken off the books. That's not something they support.
All right. And so that's coming up for a vote right now, a contentious issue, as you say. Budget proposals also still lingering in the background. You've been taking a look at how the process at the state level differs from how local governments devise their budgets. Tell us about that.
Well, it was interesting, and this is the first time I've been here for a legislative session. You know, going through the state budget proposal starts with the governor, goes through the chambers, and it alternates. This year, the House first, then the Senate, then the House and the Senate get together in a conference behind closed doors largely and hash out this budget, and they try to have it by June 30th. So a couple of weeks ago, the House was working on a budget, and it felt like a very fast process. There was an 8-hour debate, and they moved this thing through at about 1:20 a couple of Fridays ago. The next day, going through email, I see a notification from Hillsborough, the town of Hillsborough, that they are also working on the budget, the local budget there, and that there was going to be a public hearing the next Wednesday. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I did a little research, and it turns out that public hearings are required for local budget writing processes for the cities and counties, but not at the state level, which is interesting. You know, there are lobbyists here almost every day. There are special interest groups and donors with deep pockets. And there are also folks who write their representatives and call their representatives. So there certainly is public input at the state level, but it is not something that is required. I have no idea how a public hearing would even work at the state level. I asked one legislator who told me it sounds nice ideally, but ultimately a logistical nightmare. So the required public involvement was one difference between the local and the state process. And also that timing, as I alluded to, stopped by the Wake County Commissioners board meeting earlier this week, a public hearing earlier this week. They're having a couple of public hearings. And, you know, commissioners are going to sit on the budget and consider it for a month, whereas House lawmakers got it a couple of Thursdays ago. They got the third or fourth version of the budget at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and they voted on it just before midnight and again just after midnight. As you can imagine, a local budget, which in Wake County, one of the bigger local budgets in the state, is $1 billion. The state budget is $22 billion and hundreds of pages. So I think it's reasonable to ask if folks need or would want a little more time to digest that meatier proposal, if you will.
Jeff DeBerry, WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Thanks, Frank.
Just ahead, the music of Tiff Merritt, Don Dixon, Bland Simpson, they are coming together to support an effort to assist teen cancer patients. And you'll hear it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.